Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Live from Aspen Public Radio, it's Valley Roundup. I'm your host, Wyatt Orm. Politicians are battling over immigration in Washington, D.C., but what are local dreamers thinking, and how are they feeling about their futures? Aspen Valley Hospital is giving terminally ill patients the option to end their own lives. And the X Games kicked off yesterday. Two local skiers earned spots on the podium in the Superpipe. We're coming up on Valley Roundup. Joining me in the studio today are Samuel Bernal of Radio La Tricolor, a Spanish-language station out of Basalt. Hi, Samuel.
Hi, Wyatt.
Madeline Osberger, contributing editor with the Aspen Daily News. Hello, Madeline.
Hello.
And Allison Bektesh. Hi, Allison.
Hi. Hi, Wyatt.
Allison's reporter and the interim news director here at Aspen Public Radio. Thanks to all of you for coming on the show.
Thank you for inviting.
Great to be here.
Okay, so I want to start by talking about DACA, and I'll have to bring everybody up to speed with a little bit of talking. So as a refresher, DACA is the Obama-era policy that protects undocumented immigrants brought to the country illegally as children. And this is the group that's known as the Dreamers. The Trump administration ended DACA this past fall, and DACA has been in the news a lot, especially over the past week. The debate over Dreamers is what shut down the federal government last weekend, and Congress and the White House are in the midst of a very dramatic and confusing back and forth to come to a deal that involves a pathway to citizenship for Dreamers, but also potentially more border security, maybe even a wall. But before we start, I want to just play a little bit of an interview with a young woman named Anai Araiza. She's a Dreamer. She got DACA when she was 19, and one of the questions I had for her was, is she staying up to speed with all that's going on in Washington, D.C.? Let's have a listen.
Honestly, I don't necessarily follow it too close just because I feel like there's so much tug of war and there are so many things that one day they say they're going to do one thing and then the next day they completely change it and do like a completely 180. I think it's just too stressful, and like I said, it's just that emotional roller coaster. And I think I just have to kind of protect myself and kind of not stress out and focus on what's here right now.
Okay, so Samuel, when we think about these young people losing their status, they essentially become undocumented, right?
Correct.
Okay, and can you just tell us a little bit about, I mean, what is so threatening? Can you talk about just how, you know, if you have a status like DACA, what the threat is to then become undocumented? Like, what is there to lose here?
Well, a lot of things. For example, you know, here you need an ID just to be allowed to do anything. You need work permission. So the threat of losing that possibility, it's terrible. Like, you lose part of your identity and the possibilities to work and to have a normal life. And so basically it's that you can lose all those rights.
Right. So when we think about Dreamers in Colorado, we know that there are 18,000 people who have received DACA in Colorado. We don't know exactly how many Dreamers there are in the Roaring Fork Valley, but we do know there are CMC, Colorado Mountain College, expects they have hundreds of DACA and people with DACA who've enrolled. In Scott Tipton's district, our congressional district, the third congressional district, we know that there are about 1,800 DACA recipients and 2,800 people who would otherwise be eligible for DACA. So we're talking about a lot of people. One question to you, Samuel, is, you know, like, if the American political system is kind of failing these people, will it take a lot to rebuild trust within this community of people?
Absolutely. Right now, it's already damaged. Right now, it's already a broken system. But, you know, there is a possibility. There is still a hope that it can be fixed in the following days. But if that doesn't happen, it will be morally devastating. It's, you know, you will have a generation of people without hope, like totally against the system. And not only with DACA, you know, the TPS.
Yeah, so that the temporary protected mm-hmm. status. Yeah, tell us about that.
Well, at least right now with DACA, we have a hope that in the following days,
a deal might be made.
Right. But with TPS, people is not talking a lot about it. And as the word says, it's a temporary permit that was granted to some countries. One of them was El Salvador. It was approved since 2001. And they were here because there had been an earthquake in their country.
There'd been an earthquake in El Salvador. Yeah, okay.
But they have been here for years. They already have family, job, house. And now they used to have to renew that permission every 18 months, I think. And now, you know, it was recently known that it was over and they only have like 2 more years to be here. And it's people, in the case of El Salvador, of course they would not like to go back to their country, and it's very dangerous.
Right.
They would prefer to stay here undocumented than going back to the gangs. So, and that's not in the negotiation anymore, and that's sad.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Do you, as far as your listenership goes, when you are sort of interacting with your listenership, are a lot of people talking about DACA? Are people talking about... you know, the kind of threats from immigration services? Like, what are people talking about?
Yeah, right now there is more people talking about TPS with our Salvadorian community because they are trying to find out what will they do now that it was it seems to be something confirmed. It's a fact, and the DACA, and I said right now they are like they know every day there is something new in this negotiation period, so they are just waiting. But I think people from El Salvador right now are more anxious about it and more worried and trying to take more action.
Right? Do they know what they could possibly do? I mean, if they can't renew any of these statuses, like do they have an option?
Yeah. Well, no, probably not, unless they are married with someone with a citizen. But some of the worries I've heard yesterday, I was talking with someone who has that case, is that they were buying a house and now. They don't know what they will do without they don't know what they will do with their family and
right like if you lose an income earner
or your social security
or whatever,
or you lose your credit too and,
mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Wyatt, you've pointed out before that both of these discussions affect way more than the people who might be sent back. First of all, the Dreamers how to give over so much information, including maybe their undocumented parents.
Right.
And that is being held by the federal government that now we know might not even want these people around and be sending them back. Or, like you said,
right.
One person leaves in a family and then the rest. Can you talk a little bit about, like, it's not just the exact people who would get sent away. It's everyone else who's connected to them.
Correct. And also in the negotiation right now, the last thing I heard today is that the White House is proposing that to pass this DACA package, they will not allow the what they call something like the immigration chain. Like they will not be able to bring their parents,
their extended family.
Correct, right. Which is terrible because you know a community is built by a family, and if they allow their family to be together, they are more productive to the community and they do a better role in their communities. So I hope it doesn't pass like that.
Yeah, right. And Allison, what you were, I had a kind of later in that conversation with Anaya Araiza, she did tell me that, you know, in order to apply for DACA, you have to submit so much information. You have to submit, you know, you're given a social security number. You have to submit addresses. You have to have, you have to be able to prove that you are within the United States, that you stay in the United States, like, for like every 90 days, you have to have some sort of proof to indicate that. So there's like, you sort of are handing over every identifiable piece of information about yourself and that of your parents. And so I think that, you know, something that she expressed to me was that she's very worried about, you know, basically if she's given over all of this information and that status goes away, then, you know, she couldn't be easier to find. And so it then sort of And so that's why I wonder about the mm-hmm. the trust, is that you've had these people who have been given this temporary protection, but you know, all of a sudden the government has, you know, depending on the government's motivation, they all of a sudden have, you know, a lot of information.
Like suddenly you become a target of a system that you don't trust and that can change their mind tomorrow. So that's scary.
And you've bought into it so much by providing all that information.
Correct.
I guess,
it actually makes me think of something that Madeline, you and I talked about a couple weeks ago on Valley Roundup, was the election commission.
The voting rights.
It's you know, at a much lesser extent, because I don't think the government would go after me and make me move. You know, I think but big data. And with mm-hmm. a president who has such a agenda, it's very clear he ran on this. He ran on, let's keep America white, essentially, you know. And so I think it's just scary when all that data is there, or they can mm-hmm. go after someone. They know your entire voting record. They know what do you do to prove that you've been here? Like, show concert tickets. They know your preferences for all these different things.
Yeah, I mean, right. I think there is an element of that. But I will say though that applying for DACA is a different agency than the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. I did reach out to ICE to see if they are allowed legally to access the DACA data. And I did not hear back. So we don't necessarily know that ICE has this sort of has the access to that. But I would welcome a response to that email. So we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. This is Aspen Public Radio. You're listening to Valley Roundup, a look at the week's news with reporters and editors in the Valley. Putting things in perspective for us today are Samuel Bernal of Radio La Tricolor, Madeline Osberger, a contributing editor with Aspen Daily News, and Aspen Public Radio's very own Allison Bektesh. I'm your host, Wyatt Orm. So, Allison, Aspen Valley Hospital recently opted into something called Proposition 106. Can you tell us what that means?
Yeah, so the End of Life Options Act, we all voted on it in 2016. Colorado, overwhelmingly majority voted for this. In Picken County, more than 80% of people said, I support this act. What it does is allow someone who is, there's very, very specific conditions, but someone can get a prescription from their doctor to end their life.
If they're terminally ill,
right? There's tons of conditions. So they have to have had a diagnosis that they will most likely die within 6 months. They have to request these pills from two different doctors. They have to go through psychological analysis. They have to also physically be able to take the pill themselves. There's very, very specific ways that someone could take this pill, and it doesn't cover everyone who's going to die soon. And that became legal in 2016.
Huh. So the pill, can you just describe, so someone would have to sort of ask different doctors. Mm-hmm. So there's all these criteria. Why did it take them a year to opt into this? Can you explain that process?
Yeah, so Aspen Valley Hospital is the only hospital in our area that has opted in.
Okay.
I think they always were going to. They're a community hospital, you know, they're taxpayer funded, and they knew the taxpayers supported this type of measure. But opening up something like that, which is such a paradigm shift anyway, how would this work? What are the rules? They've basically spent a year first researching. There are states who have beat us to this. Mm-hmm. So researching, what does that look like, and how are hospitals specifically involved in this? What do we want our policy to be? And then training the people who are going to be involved in this.
Okay. But it's not necessarily going to happen at hospitals all the time, right?
Right. So the hope if you do studies, you ask Americans, where do you want to die? The hope of most people is that they die at home. And this is actually a very specific group of people who can kind of live out that hope because they're in charge of it. So what we see with people who do choose the end of life, medical end of life options is that mostly this happens at home or in some sort of facility, long-term facility, with hospice workers all around. For the most part, this is not something that people choose to do when they're in the hospital. So Oregon's had this legal for 17 years. 1,000 prescriptions have been given out over that time. So not that many anyway. And one of those people total has chosen to end their life in a hospital.
And we don't know. And that 1,000 prescriptions is across the board, hospitals, home care, or?
Well, one at the hospital. So they also, I think I have the number. So only 600 of those have actually chosen to use. So, you know, around half of the people just want to have that option.
Yeah.
Or literally deteriorate so fast that they can't self-administer, for instance, and so don't get that option anymore. At Aspen Valley Hospital, what their policy now is that you have to have already requested that prescription. So that means going through the process. First of all, those requests have to be 15 days apart. So you have to think you want this and then think you want it again 2 weeks later. You have to have those two different doctors say that you qualify in all these ways. Then you have to get the prescription, which isn't available in our area, so you have to order it. So all those things would have already had to happen for you to have that in hand. Aspen Valley Hospital's policy is now that if you are admitted to the hospital for an emergency, so you have some kind of medical emergency and you get admitted there and you say, hey, this is it. I'm so sick of this. I've made this decision. I have the pills. They have a team who will be there and they can't help with the administration of the prescription, but they're ready for that option, which obviously most people in an ER are hoping for the opposite option. You know, so they have a team who's there and ready. But again, even that can't be a rash decision and something has to be going really wrong for you even to end up in the ER. So yeah, it probably won't happen here. The hospital is here for those patients who do choose that option.
Hmm. Was there much debate among the board members?
I think everyone knew that they would be all in, you know, because of the overwhelming support by the taxpayers, by the voters. I think it is. It's really tricky for the medical community. But I was in touch with both the hospital and hospice staff throughout the week, and I think that there is support for the patient making the decision. No one in the medical community is being asked to be a part of this at all if they don't want to. This is actually something, it was recommended that well before end of life, well before your terminal diagnosis, you talk to your current primary care physician and find out if they're one of the people who would prescribe it, if this is the kind of thing you think you would want as an option, because it's best for you to have a really good relationship with the doctor who's going to prescribe this. And if you right now know that the doctor wouldn't be one of the people who would let you do this, maybe switch doctors before it gets to that point. So those kind of things, because no doctor has to prescribe this and no one has to be a part of administering it.
You know, not to be morbid, but what is in that pill?
It's 100 pills.
I was wondering it.
It's 100 pills, so you can't accidentally, again, it can't be a rash decision. And they're water soluble. They're liquid soluble. So you have to physically be able to break open 100 pills. And actually, 90 will do the job. But they come in hundreds. And so they kind of make the patient pay for the full 100 because the pharmacy's not going to order 100 and have 10 sitting around, right? So you have to buy 100 pills, break open each one, put it in liquid. And sometimes alcohol is advised as what to take this with. And then drink it all, you know, be able to put the glass back yourself and drink it all. And then within 3 to 10 minutes, it's a sedative. You die gently, slowly.
I think it's kind of like, you know, what if you really, really want this option, but you don't have the physical ability to do so? Like, are there, it's kind of strange it feels exclusionary.
Well, also you have to have the mental capacity to break those tablets and put them in there and make your mix.
The most requests that have been turned down are when someone gets to that mental checkup with a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and they're found to be unfit. They're too far along in dementia or something. Like, they say they want it, but then the next minute they kind of don't know what's going on around them, and so they're declared unfit. So people who've literally asked for this and told no, you don't pass the psychological test. You also can't be showing suicidality or depression, which are two things that I think you would feel very strongly if you are dealing with the end of your life. I agree why there's a lot of people who this doesn't include, including people who really want to go this way. You know, my own dear mother doesn't want to last into not knowing who I am. And we've had that conversation. I couldn't just go get her the pill. She has to be the one who's asking for it. And someone with ALS, you know, someone who doesn't have the agility is also excluded. I think this is
because they couldn't like literally pick up
they know
cup.
They're dying. They know they can't do the activities that they used to do and love. And yet and maybe they don't have family around them. Maybe they are very, very ready to die and they're still not allowed. But I don't think that this bill was supposed to be the thing that just allowed anyone to get out at any time. I think there was reasons for making it very, very, very specific. Maybe things will grow from here, but it does at least open that option to those people who it does cover.
One last question. How much does it cost?
Yeah, so the it used to be about $350, so like $3 pill. That company sold their, whoever made that the pill, sold it, the price doubled and then doubled again. It's now about $3,000, $3,000 to $3,500 in the valley. Insurance doesn't cover it. One insurance company is looking at one plan that might. So either, you know, you're dying, some of your estate will go to do this, or you're not rich enough to take this option too.
Wow. So another possible, it's another way of in that it's exclusive. Okay. Well, on that, let's take another quick break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
$3,000.
You're listening to Valley Roundup. Thanks so much for joining us. We just got a caller who wanted to know the difference between Dreamers and DACA. And DACA was put in place after a Dream Act was not realized during the Obama administration. President Obama signed DACA. It was an executive order, and it basically gave temporary status to a group of people who's come to be known as the Dreamers, and there's certain criteria, but most of them were brought to the country illegally when they were children. Thank you so much for calling in. I hope that cleared that up. We're on to our last topic, the X Games. But not least, Madeline, please tell us what is going on out there. What have we missed, what have you seen?
Well, the first day culminated with two local men, Alex Ferrara and Torin Yader Wallace, standing on the podium in second and third in the men's skier halfpipe. It was very, very exciting. Even though David Wise, who won, and he's the reigning Olympic champion, he's won at X Games as well, not last year though. He was dominant, but then in the third run, Alex came out and he met that challenge, and I don't know if he was underscored, but he definitely was a solid silver, and he just nailed it.
Excellent.
And in front of the home crowd, and, you know, his parents were right near us, and his sister, and then, you know, Torin's family, and it's just, Torin's especially, because that story is, there's so many bumps, and where Alex has kind of been just more of a smooth, he was a late bloomer, he was a student, he didn't quit school early like Torin did.
Yeah.
But they both ended up at the same place in 22 and 23, and they're en route to the Olympics.
Wow. So how was Torin's run? I know you mentioned in one of your pieces that he maybe has some injuries that he's trying to protect himself from?
He's got this foot injury. He actually came out and laid it down that first run, and he was in second right away. He was in second throughout the competition until Alex knocked him down to third. But at least he didn't knock him off the podium. He's still up there.
Yeah.
Torin is nursing this. But like he said, you know, you always have injuries, but he does have a foot injury, and he's hoping to keep it. But that's not why he didn't. His third run, he missed a grab, and he just figured, oh, I'm not going to, you know, nail this, so I might as well stop here. So.
Yeah.
But it was a great night for all.
Yeah. I have just a totally random question. Do people ever get, like, do any of these skiers ever get, like, 100? Is that a score?
Sean White did out in Snowmass.
Right, that's right.
It's rare, but it's not unheard of.
How do the judges know that that it's 100? Is it just when you know it when you see it kind of thing?
I think so. I mean, you know, hopefully it's not biased judging and softer and everything. But, you know, David Wise's run last night, he had a 94 on his last run, and he definitely deserved it. I didn't see any flaws, but...
Yeah. Yeah. So one question that I have is there are 50 or so athletes who are currently competing at the X Games. They're headed to the Olympics. You know, based on your knowledge of this sport, is the X Games more prestigious event than the Olympics? Are they just totally different? Is it like comparing apples and oranges? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I think the Olympics is still the most prestigious, but for free skiing and some of these half-pipe events, the X Games is right there, and they actually led the way. Some of these sports weren't recognized as Olympic sports until 4 years ago, and the X Games has been going on here in Aspen for 17 years. So the athletes have this incredible allegiance to Aspen and the X Games, of course. But they love this venue, and then it's quite prestigious. And today... we're live, so I can say that today. Jamie Anderson, she's the reigning Olympic champion. She showed those younger girls how to do it and won gold in slopestyle. So there's just stuff going on, and over the weekend, there's so many free things to do there. And I love all the families. And I know our daughter now, she's 18, and she's been going forever. Now she's covering it as a journalist. Cool. She's been helping me a little bit. But just I love seeing the kids with their parents, too.
Can you explain what slopestyle is for those of us who can't imagine that immediately?
Well, skiers or snowboarders do it, men and women. And then they ride. I don't know if it's a minute and how long the run is. You go on rails, and then you hit these crazy jumps, and you do double flips and get air. It's wild.
Yeah, there's some other news in the skiing world. Can you talk about some of the local skiers who were just announced as headed to the Olympics?
Yeah, we have six locals. Two people were named today, which is so thrilling. The cross country guys, Noah Hoffman and Simi Hamilton, and they joined four others, Torin and Alex, who I mentioned earlier, and then the alpine skiers, Alice McKennis and Wiley Maple.
So you wrote a piece about Wiley. It was about, can you just, that's a little bit is it a Cinderella story?
Yeah, it's kind of a Cinderella story. He was left off the team this year, and then he had to claw his way back up. Fortunately, he finally he's healthy. First time, and doesn't have any weird knee, elbow. He's had the gamut of it recently. He was delivering for Hickory House, and he was painting condos during the day for money. And alpine skiing, of all the winter sports, is the rich man's sport. So it really is. That you need more, five, six pairs of skis, where free skiers don't need that whole arsenal.
Yeah.
So, it's exciting, and they'll all be going off. And I spoke to Steve Skadron, mayor, this morning, and he was just so thrilled.
Yeah.
And he talked about how it's the Aspen character. And I thought that was really interesting, that we have this history of people. Hard work, here's the results.
Yeah, right. Do you think that, going just quickly back to the X Games in the remaining time, do you think that, like, is there any, do you feel like with these adrenaline pumping sports, like, that you would want to ski at all cautiously so that you can go to the Olympics, or is it just kind of like an all out, all the time kind of thing?
That's a great question. And the athletes dealt with that, and they're like, no, we're not going to be cautious. They are going to put it down. I mean, I can't say, Sean White, are you going to do that? I would think so. I think some of it is ego, and they want to also show it's a mental game.
Yeah, right. Right. I think that's going to do it for this week's edition of Valley Roundup. I want to thank so much Samuel Bernal of Radio Electrica Lore for joining us. Thank you, Samuel. Madeline Osberger of the Aspen Daily News.
Thanks
for joining us. Allison Bektesh, reporter here at Aspen Public Radio. Thanks, as always.
Thank you.
I'm Wyatt Orm, your host this week, also a reporter here at Aspen Public Radio. Head to our website for more information on the stories we covered on this show, aspenpublicradio.org. Thanks for listening. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.